Hello, welcome to Two Brown Therapists. I'm Crystal.
And I'm Sarah.
And we are Two Brown Therapists. This podcast is an opportunity for us to talk about mental health for people of color, women of color specifically, and queer folks. We want this to be a place where you can think about some of the current events and how that might apply to the way we think about mental health from the perspective of two brown therapists. We want this to be a podcast where you think about counseling, you think about mental health, but we don't want this to be a replacement for therapy. So if you or somebody you know needs mental health support or is in crisis, please, please, please reach out to a mental health professional or somebody who's being supervised by a mental health professional. I have a counseling psychology PhD. I forgot for a second what my degree's in. I swear I'm a doctor, though. And Sarah is a licensed mental health professional as well. And we have many years of experience between the two of us. So we're really excited to talk to y'all today. Sarah, how are you doing? Let's get this check-in going.
Right. I'm doing good. Nothing much. Work is revving back up because everybody wants to, like, you know, the end of the semester. Anyway, but I'm doing good. I'm feeling good. You think I'm starting to, like, I call it my art manic phase, which I don't think I've ever talked about that, where I, like, feel like I can, like, do all this art stuff or whatever. It's not good, but, I mean, I just like doing it, and it makes me relax. So I'm going through that right now. It's like a bad thing is what it sounds like, but it's really not.
Is this what you were paper macheing over the weekend? Because I was like, did she just ask me for newspaper? No, girl. I don't know the last time I bought a newspaper except eat crab legs. You better stop playing.
I had to literally go to the gas station and, like, pay $2.50 on my debit card to buy a newspaper. I was like, well, this is so weird. When's the last time? Who uses newspapers anymore? Anyway, whatever. But yeah, that was basically it. Settling in. House is still a mess, but whatever. We're good. How about you?
I'm good. I was on call last week, so I was exhausted, and I'm still, like, triggered by phones ringing.
Yeah, that's called the on-call hangover is what I call it.
Yeah, it's crazy. But I'm still hardcore knee-deep into trying to keep up with this workout life and this eating healthy life, and it seems to be paying off. I lost some more weight, and nice. I'm actually still really feeling good. My energy has been higher, but I think it is time to get this eye surgery because I think my eye strain is starting to cause me to have some headaches. So I am gearing up for that in 2 weeks, and I am mentally preparing myself for my family to come visit this weekend for my my wedding tasting is Friday, and my family is coming in on Thursday and staying until Sunday. So that's gonna be joyful.
A lot of things.
Lots of fun. I love sharing space with them in this phase of life. It's all kinds of new ways your family can judge you when you're getting ready to be a wife.
Or like your house, or like the way you cook, or like the way you, like, discipline your dog, or not discipline, like, you know.
Yeah. If I don't discipline him, then he's spoiled. And if I do, then I'm treating him bad and he's starving and I'm not giving him enough treats. Like, you know, and then how I take care of my partner. Is he getting enough help? Why am I making him? He never has to wash a dish when my family's here because they feel so bad that he has to do. Oh my gosh. They get there before he ever even gets a chance because they just think it's so, so horrible that he has to wash it. Nobody's like, let me cook for you. My mom will sit in front of me. She'll cut a vegetable just so she can critique what I'm doing. So, but I love them so. And shout out to my moms for being an accountant because she hooked me up on my taxes. So, God bless.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hell yeah. So, I ain't mad at you. So, that's good. And work's going good for Michael, so we have some fun stuff going on at his job to celebrate next week, so I'm waiting till my parents leave to do that. But yeah, you know, just living the dream, ready to get through this and like, you know, stop preparing for the wedding and like, just want to get married and go on vacation. Whichever one comes first, I'm good.
Have like the title and shit.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, now that I'm engaged, I'm like, I don't know how people are like, I get engaged so I can find out if I want to get married. I'm like, that could not be my plight. I could not do all this work and then be like, I thought about it. And I don't know if I want to marry you. Because I would be like, I'm going home. I don't even know where that is, but I am going home. I'm not doing this. So yeah, it's been interesting for sure. But I'm good.
And anyway, and I was going to say, his man hands can't handle dishwashing, though, because they're man hands. You know what I mean? Yeah. So they can't. And that's just, that's probably why they don't want him to wash dishes.
Oh, yeah. He'll just die. It's terrible. Like, it's like they hurry up and do it so he won't have to because they just think it's so awful that he has to wash dishes. And I'm like, well, I don't really care as long as they get done. I just have to pick my battles.
Yeah. I agree completely.
Yes. And then I guess, yeah, that's all that's going on. Oh, and I saw a children's book I want to get for Dominic, but that's another story for another day. So, we're going to move on to the topic for today. This is going to be not a crazy long one, but we wanted to talk about relapse. And we wanted to do that in honor of a rapper that I love, DMX. Even though, you know, he's had a long history of substance use and he's been to rehab many times. He recently overdosed on drugs in his home and he is in the ICU in critical condition. They're saying that the lack of oxygen severely impacted his brain. Some people are saying it's not looking good. This happened on Friday of last week. And he is in a vegetative state, and he has some brain activity, but I'm not really sure what's going to happen, but I don't really see him miraculously waking up. Not saying I'm not praying for it, but it doesn't look like that's the outcome that's going on. So we wanted to talk a little bit about relapse and recovery in honor of him and because of the Demi Lovato documentary that's been floating around as well, where she's been talking about her relapse as well, where she almost died. So we wanted to talk about some of the challenges that go along with recovery, addiction, relapse, through the perspectives of the people in the news currently and just how it might affect people who might be listening or clients that we may have worked with. Sarah, do you have any thoughts?
I'm sad about DMX. That sucks. I hope he makes it through, but if that whole lack of oxygen to the brain just, that's never a good thing. But overall, I did kind of want to mention that in regards to relapse and recovery, the thing is, like, there's no specific, I don't think he did anything kind of, like wrong or whatever that kind of led to the relapse. But what I'm thinking is when we become complacent in our recovery and don't actively do things to continue to address our addiction, a lot of people become complacent in their recovery. And then they're like, oh, well, then I can do a little bit of this. And then I can do a little bit of that. And I think that's the problem that happens with a lot of people that I see or I've seen in the past that relapse, you know, become complacent. They're like, oh, I can deal with this. And then sometimes it even goes to like, well, it was crack that I was addicted to. I'm going to drink alcohol or I'm going to do opiates or whatever. And so the recovery process, I think, is you have to consistently work on it. I know the example that they always say is like, it's like having diabetes. You know, sometimes you can develop diabetes because you don't eat well. Like, you know what I mean? And the same thing, like you can develop addiction because you do the substance for, you know, for too much, too long or whatnot. But I'm just concerned. I'm concerned about when the relapse happened and what was going on in his life and stuff like that. So, but yeah, feel bad, man.
Yeah, I'm sad about everything that's going on with him. I guess I grew up in an era where DMX, the Rough Riders,
Me too.
was like big,
All that.
and I love his voice, and I think he's been through some shit and seen some shit, and I just like the way he raps about it. So it's upsetting to see somebody who's been struggling with the same thing for such a long time, go out like this. I think one of the difficult things about relapse is that we often pick up where we left off. So if you were using X amount of drugs before you stopped, when you are craving it, or when you do decide to do it again, your inclination is to go back and pick up the same amount of drugs that you were using, but your body doesn't always have the tolerance it used to have, and it can cause you to overdose immediately. It's like a quick hot shot to your body, your brain, and it can cause people who maybe have like stopped using heroin, gone through detox, are in recovery, when they do decide to use again, sometimes that first use after rehab can kill them. And I think in this case, this is may have been what happened, and I am purely speculating because I do not know his life. But I think it's just really sad to see, because I think that sometimes when you are famous, or not even when you're famous, but when you have a lot of people around you who are so happy for who you are when they think you're sober, they don't give you a lot of space to be an addict. And I think that sometimes people are so invested in celebrating your success. And I've seen this with clients and friends. If people are constantly like, "Oh my God, how long have you been clean now? That's amazing. I'm so happy for you." Like, those things are great if you are clean. But if you're not clean, or if you're struggling, those things can make you feel even less like talking about the humanity of the challenge that goes along with staying sober, especially in the first year, especially in the first couple of years. And I think it looks like he was in rehab in 2019. So it's kind of new. And when you throw a panorama on top of it, it's not like we have all been in the most supportive environments where we felt comfortable going to meetings and doing things like AA or NA or whatever it is, not even saying he would. There's just not a lot of safe places to go and say, "Yeah, I'm struggling with this," because I think sometimes loved ones want you to be over it so badly that you run out of people to talk to.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And sometimes with addiction though, like I think for some people, like you know how in trauma a lot of people get triggered and then they either go into hypo or hyper arousal. So you know they get triggered by something and they go into fight or flight basically, and they can't really, their emotional brain is kind of turned on. I think for people with addiction, sometimes I think that has to do a lot with it, as in when with addiction, it has to do a lot with, like, let's say a lot of stressors, like you were saying, like kind of getting being stuck at home or not being able to be around people kind of start coming about. I think that same process of like getting triggered occurs with them. And once somebody's triggered, though, like, you know, we talked about it with trauma, like, you kind of go on automatic, right? Like, it's this. You go on like just survival mode. And I feel like that's kind of the same thing with a lot of people that are in recovery or just or in addiction in general, is that when they get triggered, I don't think they're not able to stop that domino once it falls. You know what I mean? It becomes very much an automatic, like, I'm stressed. Oh, what am I doing? Okay, I'm gonna go use. You know, it's not really like a choice for them anymore. So yeah, I think with the pandemic, it's been there's been a lot of there's been an increase in alcoholism and addiction, increase in domestic abuse, domestic violence situations. increase in depressive anxiety symptoms. Like it's been bad, you know. And recovery is one of those things that you have to have people around you, and not just your family, but I'm saying like people around you to kind of hold you accountable a little bit. That's what the AA or the 12 step groups are all about, is kind of holding them accountable and being like, I know exactly what you're going through. You know what I mean? And when you don't have access to that, I think it also becomes difficult to cope with stressors. And I saw that he is he's had like trauma in his childhood. DMX did. So like that on top of substance use and addiction is just not, and isolation, it's not a good combination.
Yeah, I think that it's difficult to for him, because I think that when you get to a certain place in your recovery, you feel like you should be able to use again. Like, I think that one of the challenges with recovery is the acceptance that you're an addict and that you will be an addict usually, potentially, probably for the rest of your life. And I think that that's really challenging for people, because I think sometimes it's stress induced. Some people are like, I went through a period of my life where I was binge drinking. I went to recovery. I realized why I was binge drinking. I no longer have that relationship with alcohol and can drink functionally again forever. And then there are people who it's literally just the act of using a substance. It triggers something in their minds, in their brains, where literally there's no off button. And the feeling is something that they're chasing for the rest of their lives, and they cannot use at all. And I think that it is really hard for some people, especially people who have been to rehab repeatedly, to believe that they can't control it. I think to be powerless to an addiction and say, this is something that I am not capable of doing in an appropriate, social, balanced way, is a really hard thing to do. And for people of color, for men, having something that you're powerless to control is a very big thing to admit to yourself and to live out in the way that you behave and function. To be a black man and say, I can't drink because I don't have the ability to control myself. Especially if you don't want anything to have that kind of power over you, ends up being, you know, something that you could potentially refuse to accept. And, you know, when you throw the fact that he's been institutionalized on top of it, you know, rehabs probably don't feel like safe spaces for him. Therapists are often white, and nobody wants to hear what they're talking about. So there's a lot of reasons why, you know, you have incentive to keep it to yourself, and you have incentive to try and figure out a way privately to have a relationship with drugs that you can manage on your own. And I think that that is often where a lot of people get into trouble.
Yeah. And then there's the other side of the addiction spectrum, which is Demi Lovato, which she's a female, and, you know, she's also had issues with recovery, and, you know, she's relapsed several times. And you said, like, at that documentary that she had, like, it basically says that she's still using pot, you know,
yes, and alcohol. She said she is, they're calling it California sober.
California sober. I was like, I didn't even know it was a name for it, but whatever. So she's California sober. And, like, again, like, I don't know her, if she's had a trauma past. I'm assuming she has. I think she has said that there was some issues in the past. But she's also in that spectrum of, like, continued relapse. Because, personally, I don't think everybody needs to be abstinent to be in recovery. Like, some people can, like you said, some people can drink socially, one or two or three drinks, and some people cannot, like, at all, you know? So you kind of have to figure that out. So maybe she is able to tolerate cannabis, but I am always really wary about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen it go badly, I think it can be really difficult because more often than not, and this is not anecdotal, this is research, people who have a hard time staying sober, there's usually a reason why. If, you know, something almost kills you, like if we were to just think about this, like a person who has not struggled with addiction, if somebody says to you, look, sis, if you eat this cake, you're gonna die. You eat the cake, you almost die. And then after you almost die, you decide, well, I'm not gonna eat that cake, but I'm gonna fuck up some brownies. People in your life might be like, what do you mean? Like, you died. Like, you literally saw the light, you went towards that joint, and then you came back. And you're seriously, like, saying, well, I'm not going to eat that cake. But, like, this other cake, about to tear it up. These brownies, ooh, that's the business. And it makes no sense. It's something that is agitating to people around you. It's something that's difficult for people around you to understand. Because they're like, I literally sat by your bedside after you almost died because you ate this cake. Yeah. But for addicts, it's not that easy. Because, you know, if you have a strong relationship with drugs and alcohol, if that's been something that you have gone to help you cope, to help you navigate things, something that just makes you feel good, the idea that you're just going to not ever use it again is something that in your 20s, in your 30s, might not be ready to accept. You may want to have your recovery be something where you continue to try and potentially fail at trying to have a relationship with drugs and alcohol that you can manage and still have everything. Most of the time it doesn't work, but when you have a lot of privilege and power, sometimes you can make it look like it works. You can make it look functional. You know, like I remember hearing that the dude who played Harry Potter, he had a drug and alcohol problem for like the last 3 movies. And I was like, yo, y'all masked the shit out of that because I didn't know. So I think that like there are ways and people who can literally prop you up and get you through it. But at the end of the day, you know, when you go to bed at night, you know if things are not working. I will say when I watched the documentary, and I will be transparent that I am not somebody who notices when people are high. That is not a gift that I have. I am oblivious 2.0. Like, I don't notice nothing about people being intoxicated. Maybe if you're, like, on acid or something that makes you act strange.
You're a little high right now. You're like, oh, you're high.
Yeah, like, when people are like, oh, I was acting weird because I was high. And I'm like, oh, okay. But in the documentary, I could see that she was high. And I was like, you are high right now while you're talking about your recovery. And that just kind of blew my mind because I was like, you know, think about what your relationship with drugs would have to be if you couldn't be sober for your documentary about how you almost died from drugs. And to me, it's like there are certain things that I don't drink before I do. I don't drink before I go to work. That would be bad. I don't drink before I drive. I probably wouldn't drink before I did this podcast about recovery. Yeah. So it was just very weird to see that. And it's also weird to think about what your relationships with the people around you have to be like if you are able to normalize that, and how desperate everybody must be if they're like, well, at least she's not eating that cake, the one that killed her anymore. Because she's like, well, I'm not doing heroin, not doing the bad stuff, no more crack, no more coke, I'm not doing that anymore. And I'm like, that's great. People have seizures and die from drinking. They do. People can have brain damage from smoking too much weed. They do. Bad things can happen. You can overdose on anything. You can have an unhealthy relationship with anything. And I don't know. It just seems like a slippery slope to me.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you. I think last week you said something about like the mental gymnastics that you have to do when somebody is like cheating on you and stuff. I think it's kind of like the same thing with addictions, like you justify, like, at least I'm not doing this. Or, because I've had clients in the past that like were really bad on alcohol, and they're like, well, at least I'm not doing meth. And I'm like, but you got like four DUIs, man. Like, what do you know what I mean? And your children are going to be taken away. Like, what is it? So, but that's the thing with addiction, is that the part of the brain that controls drive and controls survival actually gets hijacked by the substance. And now all the brain really cares about is not eating or drinking water or having a family. All it cares about is using that substance. And it takes a lot of time to kind of get out of that stage. You can quote unquote undo that. But not to the point to where you use some substances but not others. You know what I mean? Because to the addict brain, sometimes a drug is a drug is a drug. Sometimes.
Sometimes. Right. And it may be that, like, she was sober long enough that now she's like, okay, I want to be able to have a glass of wine with my friends. I want to be able to smoke pot with my friends. And I think I can do those things responsibly. And maybe that's true. But I think one of the things I often ask my clients is, where is the point where you know that it's not true? And what are you willing to lose if it is true that you can't drink? Because right now you have almost died and you got a record deal back. You just released an album. You're riding a high of, being successful. Sorry, bad choice of words. But I think that it's one of those things of, so what happens when, do you have people in your life who can tell you when you're drunk? Because your sober coach, I got questions, but that's a whole other thing. Because I'm like, what are you doing, sis? What are you doing? I don't know. I don't know what you're doing. She has a sober coach that's like her best friend. And I'm just like, I guess you step down as her sober coach and you're like, I'm just going to be your friend who watches you do drugs and stuff. I really was confused by that. And if somebody could explain it to me, maybe I don't understand that industry and I will claim no knowledge, because I was scratching my head like, so you just watched her do heroin and you were just like, that's bad, Demi, don't do that. I don't know.
And I think in the fame industry, though, like in the fame industry, the people that are kind of holding you up are also getting monetary benefits, because if you're doing this, if you're doing good or making records, they're getting money.
And they can keep you around. Yeah, it looks like they have breakfast together every morning and they're loving her new house in the documentary and like they're enjoying how well she's doing. But I'm like, can she drink socially? Is that something she can do? I don't know the answer. I hope she can, because if she does OD or die or go through withdrawal or become, essentially a functioning alcoholic, we as people, viewers aren't gonna know until it becomes a problem. So
Until she
I
has
don't know.
another overdose or dies, like you
Or
said.
and none of those things are things that I want for anyone. Especially, when you think about, the intensity and heaviness of being on your deathbed when you look at what's going on with DMX. And, it's just tough to see how difficult it is for some people to stop. So yeah, I don't think we're here to offer answers, but if you have addicts in your life, I hope this gives you some better understanding of what they're going through and how difficult it is to walk away from substances. And I hope that this helps you develop some empathy. I hope it doesn't stop you from setting boundaries, but I hope it helps you to develop some empathy and understanding that it's not really something that they can control. Because no one would logically say, I'm just gonna keep doing something that made me almost die. So, with that being said, we're gonna go ahead and wrap up. Do you have any final thoughts, Sarah?
No, I really hope DMX is okay. I don't know. I'm just hoping that he can kind of make it through this, but.
Yeah, I'm gonna definitely keep praying for him. It's been a cloud over my week for sure. All right, well, please like and subscribe to the podcast. You can find us on Instagram, Pinterest, Twitter. or you can send us an email. Sarah's going to tell you how to reach us because I don't remember the names.
You can reach us via email at twobrowntherapists@gmail.com. We are open to that anytime. We'll answer that. You can actually reach us on social media, at Pinterest at twobrowntherapists, at Instagram at twobrowntherapists, and at Twitter at browntherapists.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, thank you all so much for joining us. Keep praying for DMX. For the addicts in your life, if you have that in you, we're going to go ahead and say goodbye today. Make sure you protect women of color at all costs. And if you know them and love them, make sure you tell them how smart they are today. How intelligent and amazing they are. Thank you.
Bye.
This was Two Brown Therapists with Crystal Thornhill, PhD, and Sarah Dawson, LPC. If you would like to contact us with questions, concerns, or comments, email us at twobrowntherapists@gmail.com. That's twobrowntherapists@gmail.com.